This is LD Expert Live. Our guest today is Seth Perler, and we've been talking about a very hot topic, executive function.
Oh, yes. And it's definitely resonating with a lot of parents. We have a past guest, Deborah Anafarian, with Helping the Behaviorally Challenging Child. She was on a show. She said, the reason I became so passionate about this field to understand ADHD is because I was shamed and blamed as a kid when ADHD wasn't a thing. I was diagnosed with ADHD at 46, along with my son, who was diagnosed at 9. And I was absolutely determined not to have the shame and blame visited upon him. The struggle is real. I tried to explain that he wasn't choosing to be the way he is. His chooser was broken. It was hard because he is 2E, twice exceptional, and so very inconsistent and smart enough to do better. And then she kind of got cut off. But thank you for being part of the solution. So definitely resonating with her. And she kind of talked about on her episode in the vein of these kids and behavior and how they're not choosing to be bad kids and trying to change that label. The book that you referenced, Mindset by Carol S. Dweck, is something we've referenced on the show before. Mindset. So Katie saying, love it. We start the day with positive thoughts and end the day with what we're grateful for and what we are proud of that day. But she does have a question. She has, it looks like, a seven-year-old. She's asking specifically, how can we help young ones, her son is seven, with systems specifically?
Cool. You want me to go ahead and address that right now and we go into a little bit of Q&A?
Great.
Okay, great question. So I get that question a lot. How do we help? Because I work with middle, high school, and college students. The reason I generally work with them is because generally that's when things fall apart. But things have been unraveling for a long time before we see that they've fallen apart. It's just that when a kid goes into, let's say, a middle school, and all of a sudden they don't have the skills, and all of a sudden the handholding stops, and they don't use a planner, and yada, yada. And they suddenly have a bunch of F's and they've always had B's and C's. It's like the red flags there. So what about youngers? That's a question I get all the time. I also get, what about me, the parent or teachers? You know, I struggle with this stuff. I got diagnosed in my 30s, 40s, 50s with ADHD or something. And I am struggling with this. How do I apply this stuff to me? So the thing that I want to say about that is that the principles and the concepts are the same no matter what. So I have a systems assessment somewhere on my site, and that systems assessment says something like backpack. Well, if you have if you have a 7-year-old, or you know, if you're in your 40s, how do you apply that? Well, backpack might be your car. The backpack might be your purse. The backpack might be a drawer. You know, do you have a system of organization? So think about the principle. What's a backpack for? It's to organize important things that are non-preferred. Now, if you're seven and you have a preferred activity like Legos, you probably have some system. Like if you're missing something, you're probably going to notice it and be like, where's my such and such? Who took my thing? Because you value that. We're talking again with execution about things that aren't, you know, as important. Do you have a system for your taxes? Like I mentioned that before, where you are, you know, organizing them, even though it's non-preferred. Well, it might be preferred for some of you. For me, it's not, but I do have a system. So anyhow, the systems can be adapted to whatever age. So it's the principles behind the system. So let's take a look at a 7-year-old. Can you help a 7-year-old plan? Many, 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 many ways. One concept I want to leave with you is visual, 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 visual. The more you can make things visual, or visual and tactile and auditory, the more you can make things sensory, the more you can make cues for schedules, even at that age. Maybe you have a magnet chart on the refrigerator that you just made with some scrap paper and tape or magnets or whatever, and your kid drew the pictures of the different activities that you do every day, maybe breakfast, brushing teeth, blah, 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 and they can reorder them, and that is planning. Maybe at night they wash their face, put on their pajamas, and brush their teeth. And maybe in the bathroom, you make a separate chart where they can move magnets to those three things and they can reorder them and choose their order that they want to do those three things. That is planning. Maybe you can start using the words, the cue words that you want. Like, hey, let's plan your evening. Hey, let's plan bedtime. Hey, let's plan, you know, your afternoon. Hey, let's plan free time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I always say it doesn't even matter if you follow the plan. It matters that you make the plan. Half the time, these kids don't follow their plan, but they're getting way more done than they would have had they not had the plan. So again, we got to be real careful, be real aware of what the goal is here, but you can start planning. Now, as far as organization, let's look at organization of drawers for t-shirts, for socks, for pants, or whatever, shoes, you know, you can have, shoes can go on the floor in the closet, but you could also just make a box and the kid can draw. You can take a photo of the shoes, stick it on there. You can draw shoes, stick it on there, write the word shoes, do a combination, visual, visual, visual. And, you know, when it's time for clean up your room, it's not time for clean up your room. It's time for one task at a time, put your shoes away. And it's not abstract anymore. Clean up your room is abstract and overwhelming for, mm-hmm. for these kids. For kids who are highly organized, they really enjoy that. Their brain is thinking, these kids, it's not as intuitive. So we want to give that structure. You know, the drawer with t-shirts, let's say, it can just say t-shirts or shirts, or they can draw the picture or whatever. And so it's not clean up the floor, it's put the t-shirts away. It's one task at a time. Now, when we do that, we're also helping them do what I call chunking. So we're not saying, again, to use the clean your room. We're not saying clean your room. We're saying we're going to chunk this into a small manageable task. Imagine if a kid is learning just simple planning and organizational skills. These are two systems at this age. We're not even directly, we're directly teaching it technically. But what I'm saying is we're not saying I'm going to teach you this today. We're just walking them through the motions over and over and over and over and over. Imagine how they're going to be when they're 12 years old and they think, they're going to start thinking, oh, I need a place for this. Oh, I need to label this. Mm-hmm. Oh, where's my home for this? Where's my home? And now imagine the kid who never had that and they aren't having those thoughts over and over. They haven't had those thoughts for all the years before. So they're not thinking, oh, I better create a system or a place to organize this, or I better figure out a way to manage my time and this homework tonight, or I better plan. So that's the gist of what I guess might be helpful to how do you adapt up or down. Mm-hmm. And as far as the mindsets, real quick, I do want to talk about defaults. So we tend to, what I'll do when I start working with a new kid is I'll do a lot of questioning. I'm just asking them things and just listening to them, but I'll hear them say something and I'll kind of jot it down and I might put a little tally by it. So I might hear a kid say, well, so do you use a planner? And they're like, no, planners don't work for me. Okay. So how's it going with math? Oh yeah, that math class doesn't work for me. Yeah. Okay. Well, how's it going with folders or three ring binders? Oh, I, by the way, Seth doesn't approve of binders for my kids. Side note. So how's that binder working? Oh yeah. Binders don't work for me. So I just heard him say, doesn't work for me three times. I know that that's a mindset that they have. Then now I have some evidence and I could go, you know, I noticed that you keep saying it doesn't work for me. Why do you think you say it doesn't work for me or I'm bad at or whatever? So when you're looking at somebody's defaults, now this is, I'm getting into very challenging territory here with parents, because there are parents here that are listening, Jill, I'm guessing, that are going, oh, then I can help them. Now I can help them see, you know, all of their mindsets, because they always say this. Well, beware, your kid is way less likely to hear it from you than Jill or I, first of all. Second of all, if you are going to go down that road, you can, but how you do it really has to do with the attachment theory. And are they in a place where they're receiving that? They're not receiving it and they're not feeling heard. This is a useless conversation you're going to have with them. It's going to create more distance and less motivation, which is not what you want.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So you did answer two questions. Tammy was asking, how do you suggest to help get from resistance mindset to can-do thinking? So you definitely—
Well, another way is to practice it. So you don't just stop doing something, right? I don't just stop eating a pint of ice cream every night. I start eating you know, a piece of fruit every night. Instead of that, this is just a silly example, but we don't just stop resistance thinking, we have to replace it. So I do want to mention that too. Like our messaging, I talk about the 3-to-1 rule, try to use 3 positives to every 1 perceived negative with your child. Mm-hmm. The Karen Dewey Boys talks about that kids hear 20 to 30 negatives for every 1 positive. So the messaging kids hear over and over and over and over and over and over and over really goes in there and encourages patterning. So we need to really, the person who said, you know, they do like gratitude with their child every night and start off with these positive things in the morning. Like that's the way to do it. Like to really, really, how do we change the conversations and replace it and really fill it with, these are your strengths. That was so awesome. You know, really not in a fake way. These have to be authentic. Mm-hmm. We authentically right. notice what's quote wrong or not going right or what we don't approve of.
Right.
Can we spend more energy on what's going right? And that's very hard for us to change. I'm sure, Jill, I'm sure you do. I'm sure a lot of your magic is in that, because that's what mm-hmm. I would not make any traction with my kids if I didn't do that all the time. I'm sure you'd probably do the same, Jill. Like mm-hmm. you notice the heck out of every single positive thing all the time.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. I mean, this is exactly resonating, especially, you know, the viewers we have today that do have younger kids. You know, how do you, and you talked about, thank you, that was really helpful about just establishing those systems, teaching them one thing to do. We definitely in our centers use visuals a lot, and mm-hmm. our kids look forward to it. You know, so Katie, just, you know, you asked about your 7-year-old and with following multi-step tasks. And so exactly what Seth recommended with visuals of just, okay, first we're going to do this and, you know, it might be a picture, and second, we're going to do this. And then, you know, choosing to change the order because maybe it makes more sense to do one thing first and something else after that. All of that is what planning, you know, kids get that benefit of planning and organizing and being in control. Also, that's a big component of it. I feel I have ownership and I have control over my choices. And that helps to develop their executive function skills. We've seen huge changes with little guys and even kids that don't have as much language by using visuals, definitely.
And Lauren, can I add on a nuanced thought to that too? When Lauren said that you can, so basically you have a multi-step process. So you would chunk those down into the individual steps. And that's not always concrete because sometimes, but you can all figure that out on your own. But Lauren talked about the order and she said, sometimes they can choose the order. I really, 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 really want to caution you to not rescue and enable if they quote mess up the order or don't get it right. Mm-hmm. What a great opportunity for them to go through a process in a safe way and it doesn't work. And instead of saying, instead of rescuing or using the logic or reason or whatever, like saying, wow, that's interesting. What are you going to do to solve that problem? What are your ideas? Mm-hmm. And really giving them some agency and ownership and power in that circumstance, you know, that is a great learning opportunity.
It definitely is. I'm just resonating with what you're saying. Yeah. I mean, we learn by trying something and having it not work. And that's mm-hmm. how we begin to rewire our brain by recognizing, oh, that didn't work. I have to try something else. And so really making it an environment where that's actually a positive thing. Wow, you tried this. What happened there? What else might you try? You know, and I love the intentionality of using words like, you know, validating that they're planning and they're, you know, they're solving a problem. You know, those are executive function skills. And so we want to be really intentional about just kind of building that into our language. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I'm just resonating with everything.
No, this is kind of what we're seeing in the comments. I mean, just people say, okay, I try this, or this has really helped me with my child. We have Joanna here who actually has an adult son You know, she says, tell my kids, say a positive statement about being successful each day, celebrate three positive things. So that goes to your 3-to-1 rule. Don't compare yourself to someone else. Look at your own progress. Joanna later shares that she has an adult son. My son was sometimes smarter than his teacher. His challenge now is that he's in the Marines and he's on his phone and the internet more than he should and does not make friends easily. He's a right fighter and we are working to help him to be aware that he has to allow others to be right and to stop trying to get everyone to agree with him. It causes fights and others don't want to interact with him. He is exhausting, but we love him. So can you speak to that element a little bit of, you know, in executive function, there is also a social component or effects. It has social consequences
for sure.
Because of, I mean, there's resistance there too. Seth, do you have any like advice for when, you know, we always, when we talk about executive function, a lot of parents chime in because we think about school, but also, you know, adults, you said their life is different. It could have social consequences. Any suggestions or advice for when it does bleed into the social aspect of not wanting to listen or accept someone else's opinion, things like that?
I mean, there's so many things to think about with this, but I think the first thing that this brings me back to is that this is not linear, and the advice that I would give one parent wouldn't be the advice that I would give another parent, depending on the dynamics of the family, the personality of the kid. Like it really, and I also want to encourage you in a really positive way that like. We were talking about before, this isn't like a, where do you start? Like, it's not like a linear start here. Like just starting with anything is good. So as far as, you know, the social thing, the part of what I'm thinking about in this sort of, with executive function in particular, one of the many aspects of executive function that this reminds me of is the impulsivity and inhibition. So you have impulsivity on one side of the coin and inhibition on the other side of the coin. When we are impulsive, we are not inhibiting. Okay. So when we are inhibiting, we are not being impulsive. So you can look at it that way. Now, this is a very surfacey explanation, but socially, one thing that we can do is to objectify or depersonalize these concepts in a really positive way with kids. So in order to depersonalize something like that, and I'm saying in a positive way, there's also negative ways to depersonalize something and objectify something, but this is a very positive way. And here's what I mean. We can, and I do this all the time with my kids. So say, hey, I notice that your brain, or I can say my brain, you know, I don't want to call them out. Well, it depends on my relationship with them. But, you know, our brains want to, you know, sometimes are impulsive. Our brains, so I'm not saying you're being impulsive. Mm-hmm. Our brains are sometimes impulsive. And sometimes we don't think before we say something. And sometimes there are consequences. Then I might use a story from my life. One time, I always use this one story because I was living in Los Angeles driving on the busiest highway on earth and I flipped someone off. I never do this. I don't think I've ever done it before. I've never done it since. But that was a moment of impulsivity and there are consequences. I wouldn't say that to just any kid. I would say that to some of my angsty teenagers though. But I might put it on me because so you need to really think about the dynamic. Are you going to say, you know, hey, when you do this, there are social consequences? Again, if it's being received, that's great. The whole thing has to do with it if it's being received. If it's not being received, you have to re-strategize. So I might tell a story, hey, I was impulsive and I did this, blah, blah, blah. Can you relate? Like the more I can get them to take ownership and buy in the social situation, the better. Another thing is that a lot of kids, in my experience, a lot of kids, when that relationship is there and they feel heard by you, They want and appreciate knowing about social rules and why people do certain things. They don't want to just be told, hey, here's how you act. They want to understand why people are perceiving things. Now, we don't all have the answers to everything, but to try to explain things to kids, like, I, you know, you know, I've had a lot of discussions with kids, really bright kids who'll be like, well, that's fake and that's blah, blah, and that's not authentic. And it's like, cool, you listen to them, like go down that. Yeah. Yeah. So what's the big picture here? Is there ever a time when you should be fake? Is there ever a good reason for that? What, you know, like I want them to come up with their own answers. I don't even always want them to even come up with their own answers. I want them to walk away asking their own questions. That's when I've really done some good.
Right.
They walk away from me and they come back a month later. And maybe I see them three times a week, every week. But a month later, they come back to that conversation. They say, you know, Seth, after we talked that one time, I've been watching people in high school and I noticed, well, like they have been asking the question, that's really thinking huge about it. Like I'm not saving them. I'm like, I really want them walking away with that residue of the conversation so that they're developing introspection, metacognition, self-reflection, self-awareness. Yeah. And so there's some comments on that.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you. Yeah. We always, I mean, something in our executive function training when we've done it throughout the years, and I tell parents there has to be some kind of emotional connection. And you talked about that, you know, dealing with resistance and sometimes processing something we didn't like or that was unpleasant after the fact in a neutral way can help to launch some of those questions of like, hey, I notice, you know, for the kid to be start noticing things in their own environment or notice how people respond to them as just kind of a springboard for changing behavior.
Right. So those two words, I notice, write them on a sticky note. That's a brilliant tool. Yeah. I notice, you know, and then don't ruin it by once they respond, starting to respond to the response right away. Let it marinate. Say, tell me more. Like I call it wait time, but like that art of
The art of being quiet.
definitely. We can continue the conversation in Mom Squad. That is our private Facebook group. You can find it on our Facebook page or going to Facebook groups, SLC Mom Squad, by searching Facebook groups, SLC Mom Squad. That is a private Facebook group for parents of kids and teens with learning and attention challenges. And I'm posting guides. Guides are a collection of resources on various topics. And I do have one on executive function. We posted some suggestions on task flow charts and mapping out decisions and tasks, as well as an executive function continuum is in there. So you can find that in SLC Mom Squad.